Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
In the year of the primal form, the born of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse, and man was the lord of the earth. He made him and flew skin from the heart of an early tree. He compassed the earth therein, and man was the lord of the sea. He controlled the vigorous steam, he harnessed the lightning for hire, he drove the celestial team, and man was the lord of the fire. Deep mouth.
Good afternoon, good evening, good wherever, good whomever, good however I might find you. This is Alan Averill, this is Agitators Anonymous. Who knows what episode it is? Who knows what year it is? Who knows anything at all? Well, I'll tell you who certainly might know a few things, and that's Fernando from Moonspell. This is a long-form interview with my old mate Fernando from Moonspell. We used to write together the odd time way back in the 92, 93, maybe 94, not sure. Moonspell appeared in the second or first episode of my fanzine, The Oath, way back when, I think but around the time of the Anno Satanae demo, Under the Moonspell, maybe even. So always a pleasure to talk to a very clever, a very astute, insightful guy. And there's a lot of different topics covered on this podcast. A lot of interesting stuff about the music industry, about Moonspell's past, about live streaming events, about what the future could be for the music industry. Of course, it's tinged with an air of pessimism that only two middle-aged men could muster who've been around for such a long time. But it's interesting stuff. There's some Portuguese history in here. There is some stuff about the southern, let's say, attitude toward life, art, culture, philosophy, Nietzsche, all sorts of stuff. So let's get into it. Fernando from Moonspell. There's a few little sound glitches here and there. You can blame the gremlins of the internet for that. But just hang in there. It's worth it. A good chat. Let's go. Fernando from Moonspell. We just pick up the thread with Fernando talking about growing up in Lisbon back in the day. Starting off talking about heroin, but you know, what are you going to do with the 1980s?
We had a big problem with heroin when I was growing up.
Yeah.
I was born in 74.
Yeah.
And the 80s just hit full blast with everything.
Yeah, same, Portugal. Same, yeah.
Music, drugs, you know, orgies, you name it. And but then actually the Portuguese government, they actually dealt with it in a way that is kind of like a study case. They didn't imprison the people that were junkies. They treated it as a medical problem. So they kind of tried to solve it, to give them like health, healthier conditions to shoot. And, you know, it kind of balanced. There was not a huge epidemic of AIDS back then, not because of that reason.
Yeah, we avoided
that as well, yeah. Yeah. And they did the same with prostitution. But nowadays, It's like one of the problems with the COVID-19 here, even though we're speaking about, I mean, just today, I'm not counting anymore, but today I just, you know, it's everywhere in the news. You can't escape it. Small town, big city, it doesn't matter. But we are like in 300 cases per day, which is like, you know, a kind of a block in the US or even less.
Yeah.
So it's also a question of dimension. And I know Ireland has kind of probably the same population as in Portugal. So that way we can definitely compare it. But nowadays it seems like this kind of initiative is gone. Lisbon is a bit eviscerated as well. But right now we do have, you know, the Chinese businessman here by the gold visas you have to invest like €500,000 in the country. I don't have €500,000. I'll never make €500,000. But no. I don't think it's a lot.
No, not really.
For those guys, it's not a lot. You know, it's just a vacation somewhere special. So yeah, I kind of, you know, I always try to stay, you know, with the head above the waters. But this second lockdown, as we call it here in Portugal, has been really eye-opening, because when it turned to be a political management issue, oh man, things got so way worse in Portugal. And I say Portugal, whenever I say Portugal, people immediately told me, what about Brazil? Yeah. I said, yeah, I know, but in São Paulo, you have three times the population of the entire Portugal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you know, you have a crazy president as well. Ours is just an hypocrite.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, but right here, especially in smaller countries, I don't know if you have the same like feeling that I have, it's that we should work better. I look to fucking Uruguay, you know, and they work so well. You know, they have legalized weed. They have a cool president. They almost didn't get into the COVID situation as well. They have a little bit less people than Portugal or Ireland, a little bit less history and less guilt as well. Let's call it this way.
Yeah.
But yeah, bottom line, we should work better. You know, we should not have this lack of criteria that sometimes just makes people really, really mad, especially people that work on music. Nowadays, they open the lines, they throw money at you. But then, you know, you go to the whatever, to the nowadays, they release like 12 million to help out cultural projects, from theater to bands, whatever. Moonspell can apply. A guy that does like installations with elephant dung can apply to,
you know.
But the problem here is that I think sometimes I think they make this to divide people. Really? Yeah.
Well, I think an awful lot of what's happening is traditional divide and conquer. I mean, our Arts Council has €130 million, but most of the discussion is about building, for example, in small towns and cities, building streaming platforms for bands. But there's no rehearsal rooms for any band in any city. All the venues will close. And so they're trying to corral people into trying to do, I guess, what we do online. And if you're a young band, I mean, you know, where do you even rehearse? Why would you bother if there's no gigs at all, but only trying to, they're trying to piggyback on your streaming numbers. And I think it's divide and conquer is a really good phrase, I think, to use for so much of what's happening, because it's the way they've sort of basically told the public, if you want any kind of freedom, you want to kill your grandmother, has sort of divided the way, you know, between, I would call myself on some level, a libertarian, not in the American sense, but that's almost like saying, going, hey, I'd like to murder people. It's fucking crazy, you know, and there's no discussion about the in-between purposes, or do we live our lives only by health and safety risks from now on, or, you know, all risk taken away from the public. I don't know. I'm pretty worried about, where society falls after this, you know?
I'm very worried too, because, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you're going to taint yourself with politics. But I think we were quite quiet in our corner. And then politics came to us, because we have no other way around it. I mean, I would love to go to a bakery here in Portugal and sing Alma Mater, and they give me a loaf of bread. But that's not exactly what we do.
No.
And nowadays, probably in Ireland too, everybody is an expert in everything. They talk about the virus, they talk about the vaccination, they talk about everything like they studied it for 20 years or something. That is kind of like the medical degree here in Portugal. And if you take something like a master or a doctorate, it's going to be like half of your life, you know, just studying it. About the old people, it's like in Portugal, well, we, Italy and Japan, we have the most aged population in the world. Our pyramid is completely upside down, you know. And it seems that nobody gave a shit about what was happening to our elders before the COVID-19. Because the COVID-19, deny it or not, has affected us all. Some people were just lucky not getting into, you know, sanitary or health complications. But everybody was affected by it, you know, to what extent we still have to do the math. Historically and scientifically, we need a couple, you know, in order to appreciate what happened to the world and to the society. But one thing is for sure, a lot of the problems that Portugal is facing are problems that are already embedded in our structure as a country. You know, like the, people say, oh, okay, you have a health system. Yeah, we do. But if it doesn't work well, you know, it's not just a question of having it. It has to be functional. When it comes to the network for old people, there's a big, big business here, normally run by the Catholic Church and, you know, and the Mercy Associations. And it's like, you can't afford it. You know, it's like... you just dump the old men and women there, and then you go and pay your respects. But, you know, and nowadays we are all concerned if we're going to kill our grandma. I mean, I don't have any, I'm not a cold-hearted Boston, you know, I'm from the South Europe. Family is very important for us. But, I mean, all my grandparents are dead. And it's just that we forgot about history. We forgot how long is our expectation of living right now when compared to just 100 years back. And, you know, it's all a big mess. But I think it just came, COVID, the pandemics, and the way that people dealt with it mentally, it kind of unveiled a lot of stuff that I was already seeing happening. You know, it's not like...
It really worried me in the sense that, and I've been talking a lot about this in the podcast, is that how many people I thought, or let's say I expected more from, but who welcomed a kind of sleepwalking into authoritarianism, who kind of welcome big tech, state, and are now into every aspect of their lives, and how many people not only seem to not recognize soft authoritarianism or elements of signposts on the way, but also... they didn't really seem to care for freedom of speech or freedom of expression. And that sort of really, really worried me, is how placid many, many people were in just accepting, well, the state has just taken a year out of your life and it's going to roll on. People are like, nah, well, you know, just, you know, wait it out, and really wait it out. We could be in this for a long time. And I just really, what really worried me was not only how little the things that we value, like art or any of those things, freedom of expression, liberty, freedom of speech, mattered to most people, but how little actual intrusion into their lives seemed to matter to them. That really worried me, or worries me, you know.
Yeah, one of the biggest victims is definitely freedom of everything, really, association, speech, you name it. But I think that we're kind of nursing people already to have this kind of numbness when their so-called granted rights were taken from them so easily. Because I don't think that people in general already before the COVID think so much about freedom in the true essence of the form that you can see in history, that you can see in the big fights. You know, I think that nowadays people are really more concerned about what they can have. That's for sure. I'm dead sure about this. And also here in Portugal, it's very you know, it's very uncomfortable to see that people are really against each other, because if you say anything that it's a little bit out of the box, they will call you, as you were saying, there's no gray area. Either you are a sheep or either you are like an anarchist, you know, and societies are not made by extremes. Everything that is in the middle is the tissue of society. And I think that I agree with you. We were just sleepwalking. And even though we are not properly taken care of, you know, we still can conjure the moral or the ethics to point the fingers into others. Isn't, you know, when I was studying philosophy, I learned a lot of stuff before I started touring, which is now both things are a very distant mirage in my life. But
I know what
there
you
was
mean.
A very there was a very interesting, like, not really a sentence, but not really a quote, but a thing that Nietzsche said, that you know, everybody was like crazy, even in metal music, quoting Nietzsche here and there, you know, up and right, low and forth. And the thing is that a lot of people did not actually have the chance or the opportunity to study it properly. And he said something that I really see in today's reality, that it's so wise and so, you know, spot on. He said that we were going to evolve to kind of Jewish-Christian society where blame and guilt will be the biggest value, the biggest thing shared between people. But on the contrary of, especially when it comes to the Christianity, there will be no forgiveness. And that's exactly what I see. And we can talk about it and people can say, oh no, you're having just a, you know, distorted sense of reality. But what I see is that people are, we're all in the same sinking ship, but we still can, instead of saving it, we are blaming each other, you know? And I think Nietzsche in his own way was right to, talk about the devoid of forgiveness. Today I was in an interview with the business newspaper in Portugal, like Financial Times. Well, smaller because we don't have that kind of cash. So then they have this kind of cultural like supplement. And the journalist was asking me like, oh, okay, Moonspell talks about Portuguese history. We did it in 1755. About the earthquake, we did it in Alma Mater, we did it here and there. And she was like, aren't you afraid of being canceled? And I said, well, this is exactly what I mean. And I quoted Nietzsche as well, because obviously everybody's got blood in their hands, you know. And but it's an opportunity, and that's really came now as another social danger for Portugal. They want to eviscerate our monuments. They want to break down everything. And they wanted to do it just out of vengeance, you know. And they could,
Well, it's certainly, something that I think about that whole movement is that it takes on a religious tone. I mean, I think that's quite right what you're saying about, like, Nietzsche sort of observed that sort of medieval Christians that despite preaching forgiveness were the least forgiving people within society. And there's something going strangely about this this whole situation that we're in the sense that, you know, if you look back in the plague or something, people would go through the towns with bells. There's a sort of a level of flagellation about how quickly we've lost any understanding of the simple measurements of joy which we had in life only a year or two ago. Everything seems so deathly serious all of the time. I think it's just like a really dangerous precedent for going into the future. I think Ireland is a little bit different to Portugal in that we have no empirical colonial past or no history really that gives us that conversation. But it's really strange how people who preach the most about tolerance and forgiveness, you know, in this religious tone would seem to me to be the people who are, this sort of in this sort of new religion that there is no redemption, no forgiveness. I often say this to people in there. I'd say to them, do you support the death penalty? And they go, no. You know, like, say, people on that side of the fence, let's call them woke or whatever. I'd say, do you support the death penalty? No. So you believe in the rehabilitation of murderers, but you won't forgive someone for a tweet they made 10 years ago. Sorry, there's a lot in that blah 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 blah. Kind of.
Yeah, but believe me, people will dig in and they will find something. You know, when they want to find something, I think that's the thing. We want to, sometimes people, especially when you do like this kind of music that has to deal with the solar side of man, but also with the lunar side of man, and that you get it like as a more of a whole experience, while people know, normally for comfort reasons, they try just to appreciate the good and not the evil. You always get this, I mean, you can see a beautiful girl and then she has a rotten tooth and the big white smile, but you look to the rotten tooth. People don't slow down in the roads to see that everything is going all right. They just slow down when there are car crashes, you know what I mean? So, but nowadays it seems that there is a kind of those guys that dug the corpses back then, you know, like the body snatchers. Nowadays, I feel there is this kind of praying culture as well. And when you say, yeah, Ireland doesn't have the colonial past, people will find something.
If they really want to
create the smear campaign, they will find something. And obviously, you know, as a Portuguese, it's not like I'm proud of. I mean, I wasn't not even born, or I was not even, you know, in the concept of whatever a nation or whatever. But those things like difference, without respecting the difference, it brings a lot of issues. Death penalty, it's now again in the I wouldn't say in the news, but at least in the discussion in Portugal. And Portugal is one of the first countries in Europe to abolish death penalty. It has to do with our temperament as well. I think like a Portuguese by default, it's a forgiving creature. It doesn't really have to do with the religion. It's just in our, it's beyond religion. I think, people these days, and I'm hopeful, that's what I say in theory, because yesterday I went to buy a couple of toys to my kid in a shop. I was like in a George Romero movie. Okay. You know, with all the shopping, like everything closed down and everything was very abandoned and it looked like really scary. And there was, I was also, purchasing a couple of books I wanted to read. And immediately this guy in the next line, he was talking really badly to the, you know, to the shop employee over there. It was like really bad. And I was like thinking, what happened to the Portuguese as well? Where is the forgiving Portuguese? We are like filled with the rage, with road rage, which is the number one cause of death still in Portugal. Probably exactly with cancer, you know? And I think that, by default, we're like this. But exactly, like, I mean, talking about unforgiveness, Portugal, Italy, and Spain, they had the three full centuries of Inquisition. And only after the earthquake of 1755, there was an opportunity of, discussing the theodicy, discussing the role of God, and discussing the big, big strain that the church, that the cross had in Portugal. And one thing led to the other, you know, after not around 100 years, Brazil became independent. You know, and in the next, let's say, two decades or three decades, Italy and Spain, they abolished Inquisition too. You know, so we kind of have this, like, for instance, our national theater in Portugal, in downtown Lisbon, was used to be like the backstage for Inquisition, the torture, the out of the fe, you know, the burning was done there. And it's now, if you want to go back then and, you know, show the no for forgiveness, because there was such a brutal thing to do, we'll have to wipe out half of Portugal, to be honest. You know, we have to bring in the machines and just destroy the rest of Lisbon, what the earthquake hasn't destroyed, which was not a lot, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's kind of, sometimes I feel that in music as well, you know, being so many years in the scene, I kind of feel the absence of that gray area where we could have fun, you know. And nowadays, I mean, we just released a new album. I have to speak a lot about the new album. Sometimes I just tell the journalists on the other side, I'm not going to sell you my fish. I mean, I'm 46.
Yeah.
I have a few years left in music. So let's have a conversation, because sometimes they ask me, oh, your album is more moody. I said, but yeah, sometimes when I listen to metal music, I feel that at the first song, I'm already tired, because the singer, the girl singing or the guy singing already did all the notes there are in the scale. The guitar player already played all the chords, you know, the drummer already, you know, went fast forward 250 beats per minute, and I'm overwhelmed, but in a bad way, you know. So yeah, I think that comes with age, the nuance, and but that's completely gone from the society, if you want to like look at it through that scope. Yeah, I think people can't get a joke, people can't, you know,
nuance always very, find some dirt. Yeah. Nuance is a very important word, especially when, you know, you're thinking about these arguments. I often say to people who are entrenched on either side is that, well, I don't really want to live under either one of your regimes. So we have to reach consensus, but nobody wants to debate to reach consensus. And when you try and talk about, like I was talked, did just recorded a podcast before this, and I'm discussing the idea that I'm like an open skeptic. I've always been an open skeptic, but now being a skeptic, people misinterpret as you just being a cynic, but they're two different things. But questioning everything now gets you into trouble, you know, like questioning what's happening now. I mean, I started this podcast right when 2 weeks after it happened, and I said in the very first podcast, biometric passports, blah, 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 this isn't going anywhere. And a year later, almost everything I said is like just exactly mapped out. And the idea that still amongst my peers and people I know, this unwillingness to kind of question, it feels like it's something like a lost, something lost in our cognizance, you know, as you say, nuance, or the being able to comprehend nuance, missing from so much of the argument. And it's, I don't, very strange to me.
Yeah, I mean, we are about the same age, I think.
Yeah, I'm 1 year younger than you. Yeah, yeah. I'm 45.
We grew up in a world that was actually roughly divided in two, you know, Soviet Union and the US, and all these theaters of war in Africa, in Vietnam, etc. They were all a lifestyle or a political side against the other, you know, and they weren't, fortunately for all of us, they weren't like going like full way in starting a direct war between each other. So right now, I always grew up by, you know, followed up by this shadow of the nuclear disaster.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it was scary. And there was all these movies like The Day After, you know, when the War Games, and yeah, it was really scary. But we could find consolation, especially in music, that was, amazing and immortal, let's say, songs were made based on that divided world. Let's call it this way. But I have to say, it was an ugly world, but at least we could figure it out. Nowadays, I wouldn't even say that the world is fragmented. I say that the world is pulverized. You know, we all become a little atom of opinion,
yeah, yeah,
of selflessness.
Everyone, you know, has their own truth, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's really killing our society. It's very hard to, we cannot even burn bridges anymore, because bridges are not being built anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a good metaphor.
And on the, yeah, and on the other side, it's like, I remember, you know, I came from a, like, you know, blue collar family, typical from the suburbs of Lisbon.
Yeah,
which was a great place to live in, because the suburbs of Lisbon, the slums, were not like the Brazilian favelas. It was a little bit better, the conditions of life, But they were an invented place, you know, because they didn't exist. It was all countryside outside Lisbon. And then they start building buildings, you know, they start like the plumbing, you know, the sanitation, etc. But people that went there, they had all these different backgrounds, different folklore. They come from the seaside, they come from the south, from the interior. And they kind of built a community that had lots of problems, but that could solve them in a way. And that's this kind of spirit. I find it's quite gone these days. I mean, there was there were true antagonists where I live in the microcosmos of my Portuguese slum. But still, I don't know how they did it. It still worked. You know, there was still some common purpose, or I don't know, something that connected them. And nowadays I see people just defending stuff that it's not sustainable by science or by law or whatever, but they just stick to it. You know, it's like we are stonewalling around ourselves, and that social distancing was already a reality. Besides all the connectivity, there wasn't authentic connections. I think people lost that. And I don't mean it doesn't have to do with the shape. You can go even to social networking and have, well, not all the times, it's quite a rarity, but still learn something. You know, nowadays it's just switch it completely. Sometimes, I mean, it's a necessary evil. We all use it. We all have to have that. I don't have personal accounts anymore, just band accounts. I have a LinkedIn account that is quite boring. And fortunately, it's boring that you can get, you know.
I had one and I deleted it, but
But
I still have it because I still have it because I'm sort of, I wanted to be further away in the last couple of years, but then when all this started, I went, how am I going to get rid of all the fucking madness and all the things I want to say? Okay, you need to do a podcast. So I've got more in, but I totally agree with you. I think what it is that we're at the end of a 10-year cycle of almost derangement, and that our lizard fucking brains can't cope with this much information and misinformation. And I totally agree in that. Once upon a time, maybe the family sat down after dinner and looked at the news, and you had a shared version of reality. That's been destroyed, I think, in that we all are privy to our algorithm. We all get different kinds of news. And I also find that if I say to somebody a piece of information now, no one ever will go, very rarely will somebody go, really? Okay, and take it on board. I'll go and look into that myself and come back and go, yeah, you're right. I inform my opinion, or I try and hold that line. But most people double down. Doubling down is like a virtue now, or, you know, like, you made a, you know, you've been in a cul-de-sac and so you had to, you know, whatever, reverse or something. A reverse is a pretty good maneuver, you know what I mean? Fundamentally. Yeah. And everybody thinks that that's some form of like, everything is about winning and losing in your entrenched camps. And I think that that's because we're literally deranged. And I think that this situation that we're in has been perfectly played by agents of power and big state and tech, or whatever you want to call it, because they know that everyone is already at their throats before it kind of began. I think we're saying the same thing in a different way, but I agree with your observation totally, you know?
I mean, if you want to just zoom out of the social networking, because there's always a filter, you know?
Yeah.
There was a Portuguese comedian that made like a small movie, and humor is very big in Portugal right now. The comic relief, it's very much needed, but it has a lot of inner struggles as well, because there's a lot of finger pointing and blaming even on that that business. But he made these he's not even one of the best, but he made this, he picked up a video from online, from YouTube, or I don't know. And it was two dogs, you know, and there was an automatic gate between them. And whenever the gate was closed, whenever they had something in between them, they were like all angry at each other, and they were like you know, wanting to bite each other and barking violently. But when the gate came out and they were face to face, they were quite quiet and licking each other, and they call it social networking. And it was kind of like very witty of him to do that, because it's something that like, for instance, in Portugal, when it comes to Moonspell, it's like some people say, oh, you so love, they say, hey, we love but we hate it, especially by our famous, or can be like you know, having whatever success. It hasn't happened like this, because we all had the same opportunities in Portugal. We had all to deal with the same prejudice as well. So you know, and that kind of also, it's being Portuguese. But whenever I go to a metal show or an underground metal show, it's like I meet a lot of these people and they kind of treat me nice, and I'm quite, and I feel, yeah, maybe I'm a bit deranged because I thought you hated me and now we're having beer. So yeah, but in the subject of the news, I remember something. Well, I mean, I'm at ease with your podcast, so I'm going to tell it. But my father, you know, is a totally normal Portuguese man. You know, he had to raise three children. He had to work hard sometimes. And when he came back home, he just wanted to wine and have his schnapps, and that we wouldn't bother him. You know, he did it because he hated us. It's just that, you know, those were the times. So whenever, talking about the news, whenever we sat down, you know, and when we had the dinner time, it was like, it started to be watching the news, the 8 o'clock news, you know. And in every news piece, there was hunger in Africa. And my father was always like, oh man, they have to show these pictures while we are eating. They make us feel bad. And I thought from an early age, well, that's exactly the point, you know. And nowadays, these kind of news have completely vanished. Yeah. And we have like, so only here in Portugal, we have like 10 news channels between national TV, private TV, and cable TV. And even those kind of problems, because I'm not a fan of this first world, second world, third world, you know, those are conventions that say a lot about the people who gave those names to those concepts in a way. But sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I mean, the news are just like our problems, you know.
Yeah, you're totally right.
It's
earlier, a few months ago, when I was arguing about lockdown with friends of mine. Now, I've been quite outspoken about being against it, but that's a different, you know, train of thought. But I there was all these articles when you had to really dig, and it was the head of the World Food Program who was saying, hey, like 130 million people are facing starvation in the second and third world because of lockdown, because the methods of food transportation from the first to the second to the third have now stopped. And like, and you know, I was playing football with all these guys from North Africa, you know, Morocco and Algeria, and they were just, one of them said to me, he goes, you know, can't farm today, can't eat tomorrow, we can't stay in lockdown, because he was trying to get back to see his family, you know. And I talked a lot with them about all this kind of stuff, and their stories and the echoes of that story about from the guy from the World Food Program should have been headline news in our papers. Hey, what we're doing is starving the third world, because that would have been the number one in 1986, you know, when Ethiopia and stuff. And they were barely even registering, because all of our stuff was cancel this, Twitter that, blah, 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 like all social identity, well, to me, nonsense, which meant generally. But this huge thing, like, wow, almost 200 million people on some estimates are facing starvation because of what's happening. And everybody here is sniping at each other for, oh, you were at the beach and this, that, and you're like, what the fuck are we talking about? And it really struck me again. I totally agree in that there once was a time when we agreed on what was a huge news story, and it was. And now the way of viewing these things is so obfuscated, and so it's so smoke and mirrors. Like I sent that article, I found a bunch of articles and I sent them to people I knew, and I went, you see what's happening? And they were just like, oh, just like, well, okay, this has no impact. You don't think that it's worth, you know, okay, what's the trade-off? A few thousand people aged 82 in the West against this? I don't know. Who makes that trade-off? And so therefore, you're a terrible person for suggesting that. But at the same time, you go and you bring up, hey, there's something big and serious happening, but you're busy being told what Twitter thinks about the royal family or whatever. I don't know. You know. Sorry, the long rambling question again, but you know what I mean.
No, but it's true. It's like it's subtly swept under the rug. Mm. And I think, because when people say, well, it's like even with the money music and the Spotify's, I think sometimes people don't address the right problem. The right problem in the West, let's call it this way, is not the absence of fortune. It's the distribution of fortune. And that's completely, I have no doubt that there's a lot of schemes, that doesn't allow, for instance, musicians to take the right cut. But I know this is a problem of my class, of my working class. Mm. But besides that, I never, ever forget about those coordinates of the problems that we didn't want to solve or that we were not capable of solving. And that's on us, really. You know, that's in all of us. And I'm not blaming because we could do better. For instance, when lockdown came in Portugal in March 2020, a lot of the Portuguese artists that you see on television and those the ones that show their faces in their, raising money for causes, etc., they were all like really panicking. And they all went on Instagram to do this kind of, hey, look at me, I'm opening a tuna can, but I'm also singing to you guys. And then after a couple of months, they were like, oh, we had so many buzz or so many flow, whatever you say, but if you just pay 1 euro, I'll do 100,000 euros. And things don't work like this. I mean, we cannot be naive. One thing is for free. We even have a saying in Portugal, if it's for free, I even take a shot in the forehead. You know, that's what we say here in Portugal, because we like free stuff, like like everybody. And the thing I did with Moonspot was that I had to question myself about what was the true role of a band like us and like many bands, be it entertaining, whatever, all the aspects that the musician can have, interventionist, entertaining, whatever. And what I felt is that, well, this is not the time to reclaim stuff for ourselves, because a lot of people said already in advance, oh, we're going to get broke and we're going to get like, we're going to starve, etc. And obviously there's lots of problems, but it didn't happen to the scale of the problem that we have since the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And right. one of the things we did, and the fans were really helpful, it's like we raised funds, we gave some stuff, whatever, and we raised 4,000 euros to the Portuguese League Against Cancer. Because everybody forgot about the Portuguese League Against Cancer. It's made of volunteers.
Sure, yeah.
And they didn't have masks, they didn't have a hand gel, they didn't have the surgical pajamas or vests. And we just, you know, together with our fans, we did our small part. It's not a lot of money. And nowadays, it's, you know, it's a free for all. You ask money for everything.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if we have, we also have a Patreon, which only the name scares me. Even though we are there, it's like we're coming back to the medieval ages.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Patrons, you know. Yeah,
I had it for years and I didn't use it. And then when this happened, I sat down and I went, okay, so there's no touring, which means no real income. I'm not making any money from having 20 albums on Spotify or however many I've made. I either get busy and make an alternative income. I don't mind being poor. I was poor for all my 20s and most of my 30s. And well, I mean, relatively speaking, it never bothered me. Owning stuff didn't bother me. But what I found was a different kind of poverty, which was the agency purpose, identity, focus. Being a musician, when for me, like, there's no reason to make heavy metal if we can't tour or play festivals or play live. I don't see any, like, to be kind of selfish about it, there's nothing in it for me. in a sense that all I become is a statistician. I just watch numbers going up and down because it needs movement, which remains to be seen how we get back to that place. Otherwise, live music is kind of done. But I thought very quickly, okay, I need to recalibrate and refocus. And even though it made the words patron felt odd, I thought about it in the same way, like in the medieval sense of writers that I would have, you know, read who was the patron of Shakespeare, a patron of this, you know, we're not high comparison. But, and I thought, okay, maybe this is just a direct dialogue between you and the people who appreciate what you do. And in the end, it's turned out to be quite okay, actually. But at the same time, that feeling of falling when you just go, oh, fuck, everything is disappearing. But then I kind of, if I'm pick you up correctly, I thought, I'm not going to be poor, really, realistically. You know, we can take this fall. It was all the other things that disappeared that made me feel much more, well, poor, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, maybe we're falling into our right place. When I say this, I mean, I have no strings attached that, yeah, we have to sell the music. Nowadays, our life is pretty strange. I try to create a few different alternatives also for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, writing, translating. I have the label, which is, but what I gather from there, from the experience in Portugal, is that most of the money that you make here in music is institutional money. It's connecting rights. It's this like author society rights. And yeah. I was always very critical until I found my place over there, you know, being independent and with the voice and still having the income, the extra income that it's for sure our money, you know. But I always quote philosophy. I don't know why. I don't want to brag about it. But Aristotle had this cool theory that say when you, well, you know, in a nutshell, when you throw a stone to the air, because the stone is earth, it falls back into the earth, you know. And it's very funny even that all this Patreon, these patrons, these things we have to sell to put the bread on the table until we get probably into the medieval thing where, well, or pre-medieval, where money was not really a thing that you had to have a trade, you know, in order to get food as well. But it's the Patreon thing and the Patreon thing, it's sometimes, it can be virtuous if you sell something that people want to buy it, you know. Obviously, the kind of people who buy it are not probably your purest fans, but people that have money.
Well, I would say this is that in my estimation of a year dealing with Patreon, I have a feeling that if you had 100 dedicated patrons, you would make more money than back in the day selling 100,000 records in a year. Most likely.
I already did.
Which is crazy, which, when you think about it, you know.
One of the most revolutionary things I have, I don't know if they didn't on purpose or not. I really don't like that band. I don't have a good feeling with that band. But they are from Finland. They're called Winter Sun.
Yeah.
Same. And they're a Nuclear Blast.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It just doesn't click with me. But I think the main guy was really smart because he put up this tantrum, you know, and he made... it wasn't in Patreon, but, you know, it was a different thing. Like
GoFundMe or something, yeah.
Yeah, GoFundMe. He did, I think, more than 500,000 euros, a million, I think, just to create an album. And the stuff he gave to the people that kind of supported him and his vision, because that Nuclear Blast was so pissed that they threw their advance on top of it. So he really made money for live. And it really depends on the kinds of fans you have. And those fans are really diehard.
Yeah.
If I might say so, nothing against our fans, probably they think, you know, they're, and
but I think the Winter Sun thing, he was right at the beginning of that whole GoFundMe thing. And then all those GoFundMe and stuff, they've sort of died away now. Patreon is a bit different. Patreon, I think, is very much about you as a personality in the sense that I have one, but the band doesn't have one. And so it's connected to the podcast and that kind of thing. But the kind of Wild West, maybe the virgin territory of Winter Sun making €500,000, I would say the people making that much money on Patreon now are comedians. They're influencers, they're YouTubers, they're not musicians, as I could as I
No,
could
the, we have a fan club powered by Patreon. It's already positive, so we don't lose money, but it's a lot of work as well. And we kind of give people all things Moonspell. Well, with all due respect, they cannot watch us having shower or coffees or whatever. I don't think that's interesting.
No.
At all. You know, it's just, yeah, it makes us, of course, we are all human and we're all going to die, you know, and our flesh will turn to dust. But also we don't need to press that too much because people buy the fantasy as well. So we kind of give more context. But what I was saying is that I already did the math for Moonspell. If we can get like 10,000, 15,000 people just supporting us, not with €1, but with 50 or whatever, we can definitely, you know, dispense all the labels, all the agents, all the live thing. It's an interesting subject to think about, because you're right. I mean, we sold with the Religious 80,000 records in Germany. It was a really good selling album for Century Media. And once I was having some grilled fish with my parents at home back in the small apartment, and there was a TV ad of Moonspell that it was like 96, summer 96, that we were going to play at one of the most prestigious places in Lisbon, the Coliseum, the Lisbon Coliseum. And then I was having the fish that my father grilled, that my father bought in the fish market. And I was like giving a look to my father, and he was looking back at me. And yeah, we said, you know, that was a really revealing moment for me, because next time we went to Germany to meet with the good old Century Media, and I'm telling you this, I have nothing against it. It was just a sign of times, you know, like the record deals there were even worse than they are today.
Yeah.
And I told them, well, we were touring intensely, obviously, and we said, we're going on a strike. And they were like, they didn't believe us. And said, we're not going to show up at the gigs, even though it was all a bluff because we were in Germany and we didn't have money to get back to Portugal, but we said it. And I remember, just to see the difference between the bands, they went to some Ludwigsburg or whatever gig. I don't remember, somewhere in Germany.
Yeah.
And they brought two cases of money with Deutschmarks. Not a lot of money, but let's say, I don't know, 5,000 euros, something like that, or 5,000 pounds, whatever. And Samael were in the same boat as us. Actually, we were touring together with Rotten Christ.
Yeah.
And we were all sitting down on the table. And that's being Portuguese as well. So the Samael guys were totally angry with Century Media. Eventually, they left. And Robert hand them their suitcase full of money and said, we don't want this. We don't want to discuss it anymore with you guys. And we took the money, not the Samuel money, unfortunately. I wanted to take both of the suitcases, but we took the money because the money is good in our side. You know, and we said, come on, we are here like, you know, like eating badly, sleeping in vans, 80,000 records, touring with Typo Negative, and I'm having grilled fish with my father at his place that he paid for. Something is wrong, you know, and sometimes you just have to go independent there. But I wanted to have the money, you know, so we could eat and take some home and probably, you know, just start to rent a place or something like that, that eventually happened with that suitcase. But then I didn't give up, and we got what we wanted as well within the limits of those contracts. So, yeah, I think that nowadays musicians are like cockroaches. We kind of adapt to everything. You know, if the apocalypse comes, we're going to get the way of getting with our stuff because this is not our first rodeo. Obviously, it has affected a lot of our cash flow, which is live shows. It's not only the cash flow, it's a lifestyle. You know, some people say wrongly, like, oh, nowadays, yeah, of course, it's bad for my pocket, but it's bad for my head too. You know, I tour since 95.
I can do
other stuff, but it's really, even my body feels it. Even the transformations that I have, you know, the back is hurting more. You feel like you're aging more.
Tell me about it, man. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was talking to Ivar from Enslaved a few months ago, and he just said to me, he said, man, you know, the reason we started playing in bands was to be in rooms with other people, not to be a square on a screen. And I just thought that was quite, in his own way, quite profound. And I thought, yeah, it's like I said, 10 or 15 minutes ago, if you remove agency, traveling, touring, it all feels a little bit empty to me. The idea that, oh, and the amount of people who say to me, the first thing they ask me is always economic. And I go, well, okay, look, I'll survive. I'm a heavy metal cockroach, no problem. We'll survive. But, you know, there's plenty of countries that are much more worse off than, you know, Ireland is an okay welfare state, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not the actual meaning. And then people will say, oh, but can't you do it online? Well, no, you can't. But, or can't you print merch? So what, are we just going to sit around in our apartments and just, you know, do this on a screen and blah, blah. I sort of said point blank to the guys in Primordial, like, I refuse to do it. I won't do a live stream. And I'm not making an album writing remotely. I'm not recording remotely. If there's no touring or gigging or anything like this, I kind of, being stubborn about it, I think to myself, well, this is not really the reason why I started to play in a band. So you're, the deficit that you have is indeed mental. It's physical. It's the lack of agency, purpose, movement, you know, that kind of thing. I feel that really profoundly. Like, it's really difficult to just be in one place for a year. It's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call because, I mean, I have a probably different setup. I have an 8-year-old. Mm. I'm very concerned about him.
Sure, yeah.
Because
of course.
Actually, I did so much more than what I thought I would do with Moonspell coming from Portugal and whatnot. Mm. On the other hand, I also want to be kind to the fans because they actually get our back. And so we did the streaming. It had everything to go badly, but actually went really good. And we sold some tickets, but we had, because there was a movement in Portugal in 2020, there was like, you know, everything is hashtag now, but it was hashtag culture is safe. Yeah. So, and that was kind of cool in a way, yeah, because we played 4 shows to a live audience. It's very fucking bizarre. People listening to metal on a mask, you know, yeah, it's like these dystopian movies. Mm. And they can't move. They are always controlled. You have to give your ID because they want to control your movements, whatnot. But it's still, if you want to look at it at the other angle, it's an act of love for the band as well that they go actually to the show. And also, I want to shorten the distance, you know, and sometimes I try not to make, it's very hard, especially if you are a musician, not to make this about myself or ourselves. That's why I also gave in to do a live streaming. And I remember people had to pay for it. It wasn't that expensive. It was like €5, 30 cents with tax. So people were like, I will pay more. Because, you know, fans, we are behind the scenes, so we kind of have this purpose. And the fans, when they like you, they like many bands, and they want to be entertained as well. And we are not being entertained when we don't have, like you say, the traveling lifestyle, the nomad thing going on. It's not entertaining for us. It's like going and making, I wouldn't say a Zoom call, but something like it, but with music and with performance. So we're quite lucky that our live streaming had people, but we don't know if the reality here will take us to a place that we're gonna to do you know, a live show, whatever, live streaming without people. But we try, you know, to shorten the distance is also to be kind and generous in a way. And so people paid for the show, and then they wanted the show to be more time, so allowed more time. And on Christmas Eve, I was here with my wife and kids, and I had the video, and I said, I'm just going to put it on the Moonspell YouTube free, the whole video. It's professionally mixed. It looks all right. So it's not like our best performance ever. Sure. And the amount of people that were bored in Christmas Eve because they were not probably enjoying it, you know, with the families or whatever do. We got a lot of, oh, thank you so much. I was just so bored at home. So it was quite comforting. And but you're totally right. It's not the same thing at all. It's
to put it into between, to yeah, put it into perspective, though, in Ireland, no one has even been allowed to stand on any stage. Like we haven't had, we can't even meet to rehearse. We have a 5 kilometer radius placed around where around us. We every venue, every pub, like we should have been invited to be filmed by Irish TV, for example, on a sound stage to give it, to give it. For the 30 years we've spent out there playing, you know, around the world, telling people, well, you know, promoting Irish culture.
Yeah.
But no, everything has stayed shut. Not even an open air show for the public last summer. Nothing planned for this summer that I think is going to happen. Just all art and culture has just been linked to finances and economics. And so there was nothing given to the people for their mental health or anything. I only have bad things to say about our state in relation to this, only bad things. But, yes, but for us, no one has even stood on a stage. Even my friends who are folk musicians who are tied to keeping culture alive and yeah, stuff. All the pubs are, lots of the pubs are just disappearing, derelict now. And so you're thinking, like, where, how does our old folk culture stay alive? And Primordial only ever played in Ireland once every 2 years, maybe. But the idea, I don't think that anybody will stand on a stage this year in Ireland. I can't see an actual show where people are together in a small space. I think it's going to be all about health and safety, all about getting your green, your red light, your whatever, your new ventilation, your QR code that you scan, blah, blah, blah. We completely reneged on any sort of cultural, artistic debt to society, you know? And so I guess it's very sad in the sense that I would have thought that, like I saw, for example, a picture from, I think in Lisbon or Porto, of all of these flight cases, like a sort of art installation about...
It was in Lisbon and Porto,
Nothing like that. Nothing like that here. Not a thing. Not even any awareness like, and again, somebody says to me, oh, can't you just do it online? It's like, fuck off. Like, this is not how... it's very hard to explain why Ireland did this. I think it's because always our Minister for Arts was the Minister for Tourism. So, but tourism's dead now as well. So it's... Yeah, it's. I think our state did literally nothing for the people, culturally or artistically.
You know, here there was a big struggle, still is, because 19th of April, we're getting to open the theaters again.
Really?
It's not ideal, yeah. And also, we cannot play after 1 p.m. in the weekends. Yeah, but you know, it's nothing compared to there. I'm very shocked to hear that, because I think I was in this big meeting when it was in the this hall where we recorded our DVD in Lisbon. It's a big hall, and there was the cases outside. There was a lot of police. It looked like. I mean, I was already born outside the fascist dictatorship in Portugal, but it really felt like this.
Yeah.
You know, all the apparatus was really like, you know, if, how can I say, very threatening.
Like a police state. Yeah.
Like a police state. I never saw, not even in these big manifestations of football, where things can get really bad here in Portugal. I never saw so much police people like and you know, vans and SWAT and etc. And
I mean, see it. I see 10, 15, 20 police cars every day and police everywhere where I live, right? City center,
And it was a venue that just had people on a peaceful demonstration. Everything was quite peaceful. I made a video so that they put it there. But I left there and I thought that even though it seems like our class was gathering, you know, in order to produce some results, in 2021, I have two other extra, let's say, outcomes in my mind of what we did. First, the promoters here, they really try to buy you for cheaper, you know. Even though sometimes we have like this budget for culture and it's not spent, you know, and you have to return it anywhere, you could find, especially like the city hall, et cetera, you could find a way with the imagination of spending it. you know,
sure, yeah.
to balance people, as you said.
The same thing,
and the other thing, besides the banning of, in this case, Irish culture, it's the message you spread to the general people, to the folk, you know, to the real people.
Yeah.
Your government is telling them that
we don't give a fuck.
Art and culture don't matter at all. Yeah, that's why we don't save it.
That's exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, and I think they're not saying it probably because they do not dare to say that, especially in a country with a heritage like Ireland. Mm. But in fact, they mean that. One thing that strikes me very much is that when it comes to the politicians, to the political class, they don't go to the places. They have no idea, you know. They govern remotely. Like, for instance, there was this presidential elections here in Portugal. Those were cool to make. Lots of people voting, obviously thousands of people voting, but they find a way to say, obviously with propaganda, that it was healthy. We don't know. We'll never know. But none of those candidates, for instance, went to a PA company here in Portugal, PN Lights, that they have, I mean, a band as Municipal, we have ourselves a small crew, but those guys have millions of investment in equipment because they have to stay up to date. And another thing that happened to me is that I had two tickets for Nick Cave, and then, you know, they eventually canceled it.
Yeah.
And I got my money back, except the VAT.
Yeah.
And except the ticket line fee. And I was like, that's not fair at all, you know, because I paid for the VAT too. So I'm actually on top of everything, they can still make a business out of it, you know, and that's really shameful. I had no idea. I mean, I had some ideas. We talked off the record that Ireland was really bad, but at least I had that idea something happened because there was countries that had really, really serious COVID like strain, and they kind of did stuff because there was like a little glimpse of light that, yeah, one of the jobs of culture is really to take your mind elsewhere, you know. So yeah, I mean, that's really the funeral of you know, that's a casualty as well to be counted with the COVID in Ireland. I had no idea that you didn't step at any stage or any folk singer,
nothing,
any smaller or big stage. It's
nothing for a year. Nothing for a year. And again, you know, there's noises being made again about doing just only online streaming events and this kind of thing. But again, you're talking about Irish traditional music being in the pubs for people to hear and people being able to mingle and mix. And I mean, I've been trying to say this to people. It's just like a very simple equation. It's like, hey, if distancing stays as a rule, like social society is done. There's no fucking gigs. There's no anything. Like just that one thing. And my friend is like, ah, come on. And I finally got through to him, I said, hey, man, you're not bringing your son to watch football because the local football team that only gets 2,000-3,000 people in a small little stadium. Your local football team is going to go to the wall because you can't be packed into that little stadium. Do you think about that? Because I try not to pick, it sounds patronizing, but, you know, big tech state apparatus, blah, 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 whatever, great reset stuff. But just to go like, hey, real simple stuff, like your mom isn't going to that yoga class. You're not having your book launch. If rules like this stay in place, it's kind of the end of the Irish pub for as we knew it, for example, the one thing that Ireland's most famous for around the whole world. I'm not just talking about Ireland, I'm talking about in society in general. But the idea that even I said to my friend, hey, how do venues do you think get insurance for live music now in this modern day? One case, track and trace to one place, how do they get insured? And he was like, oh, fuck yeah. I went, it's a really boring thought, but it means that let's say that green light go, red light stay, means you're going to get that tick or not based on what some unelected health board official, which is exactly like the t-shirt that you're wearing, you know?
Yeah.
A very big brother. Yeah, exactly. Make Orwell fiction again. Yeah. You know, it's, I'm trying not to be too gloomy about it. You know, I realize I'm a bit of a pessimist in some senses, but just a really simple thing like, hey, insurance, distancing, travel restrictions, this kind of stuff will mean that there ain't no festival happening where people gather together and dance and whatever, you know?
Well, sorry,
that sounds very negative, but you know what I mean?
No, because I think a lot about it. And really? I appreciate you sharing that with me, because I still have to make up my mind, but because here in Portugal, we had a little bit more glimpse of normality or whatever. Mm. But on the other hand, I don't think, I don't see ourselves, I don't see things going back as they used to be. You know, the overpacked clubs, the sweat, you know, the spit, all of that, the drinks. I think that's going to be really tough. Even traveling. We did a really extreme tour in 2019 together with Rotten Christ. We had like 60 something dates, and it was really like really shitty tour bus company. Mm. And we were like, I don't know, 20 something people inside. Imagine that, you know, just traveling.
Yep.
That's like a COVID nest. You know, we will be banned from every border.
Yeah.
That and what I could see is that, and I wanted to be optimistic, what I could see it's also the death of what we called Europe, because I've seen refugee camps, I've seen even borders that weren't supposed to be there according to the law, you know, just French police coming in, sniffing everything with the dogs, with no warrant. Just, you know, just chaos. That's what I saw before the COVID sets in. So, yeah, this is like the perfect storm for the Orwell and other, you know, dystopians things to kick out. Because I don't think that you're being pessimistic. I think it's very hard to imagine like a packed club right now. Yeah. I wouldn't say where you can, like the big arenas where you can sit down people or do the Flaming Lips thing like they did it in bubbles, whatever. But those are, you know, those that's like bad folklore. That's something exceptional. You cannot be practical about it. So, yeah, I think the future of touring might be a bit compromised unless we kind of live, which is not definitely happening in Ireland, we kind of change our perspective about the virus, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we have to,
One thing, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I think it's fairly reasonable to say without offending anyone that if there is a virus in the street and you put everybody at home, then the infection rates will go down when people go outside again, because, you know, we are flesh and bone and tissue and spit and snot, whatever, the infection rates will go back up like already did in Portugal. So the secret and all the money we invest and all the intelligence and all the laws and everything, the constitutions, whatever you name it, it's to make it work under the strain of the pandemic. I think that's the key. That's what
I mean. Are doing. I mean, if last summer they'd allowed young people out, maybe they would have developed some form of herd immunity. But anyway,
not to mention that.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like it's difficult to totally discuss very openly, because you end up getting your, you know, your basically censored, so to speak. You will get your, you know, your channel banned or taken off by saying something that's contravening things. But to me, the idea that the situation isn't being manipulated by agents of power and influence, you know, and that there aren't stress testing implements of social control, to me, is naive to think that that's not happening at the same time as there being also a health and safety thing. But I mean, the idea that, I'll say this, right? I said it to my friend from Destroyer 666. We're arguing about this, and I said, okay, so if distancing is going to be an enforcement, what you're then saying to, let's pick an old ancient European city. Let's pick Lisbon. What you're doing is you're saying to the people of Lisbon, hey, by the way, everything that brought you to this moment, you can now forget. You can forget your social history, your pubs, your clubs, your museums, your theatres, your small businesses, your songs, your meeting in the town square, you bang a drum and I'll dance. All the moments of history and culture that brought you to this point are now 80%, 90% gone. Stay inside, remote living, remote working, consume through fear. And I, a part of me still believes that a great a percentage of people are not going to take that. They're not going to be told, by the way, for the next 10 years, because if this is the decade of pandemics, you're going to stay inside. They can't bring up their kids like that. And so I don't know whether this is the greatest fuck up in history, the greatest overreach in in our lifetimes. Is this the biggest overreach by state big tech or a fucked up response? But to say to people, I mean, personally, I think my city's lost, but to somewhere like Naples or Milan or I don't know, Zurich or Lisbon or Berlin, to go, okay, guys, to this point, now you're done. So we now is like a new blank page to be written by your biometrics. I just don't see how society can just be 400 and what is it, 57 million people in the Eurozone can be forced into the meat grinder and out the other end into a neatly packed sausage. I just don't feel that's... There's a lot of blur in that question. But
no. In the neighboring, in our neighboring country, Spain, they kind of had... you know, they have a lot of problems. They have a political problem of instability. They cannot form a government because everybody's penny pitching and they want, and they cannot really bring themselves into agreement, which is not strange with Spain, because Spain has never, Spain, sometimes people say it's an invention because you got the Basque country, you got the Catalonia. You even got Portugal, but I don't know what happened that we kind of forced them out of the European California and we kept it to ourselves.
European California, so, like.
So the thing is that when I started making interviews, it wasn't even for the new album. We just had a reissue and people were like, probably most of the journalists were bored. So we had a reissue and I had a shitload of interviews. I was like, what the fuck? It's just a reissue. It's something like it happens a lot of time, you know, it just gets out of print. So we're going to reissue it. And a lot of people, I had to explain to a lot of people because, you know, then we get the blame game again. Like, you mentioned all these countries, and I mentioned Spain. Spain is a street culture. When you go to a bar in Spain, to a cerveceria, there's more people outside.
They
call it the botellón. Botellón means bottle, big bottle. You know,
okay,
botella
sure.
in Spanish. That's the thing with Spain. And even if people were having a lot more contagion and etc., the Spanish are really crazy and proud enough and totally used to that culture that they improvise and they don't care, you know? And I was explaining, hey guys, sometimes it's also a cultural thing. It really depends on your city. You talked about Naples. When Naples was, I think they won like the Italian Cup or whatever, you can see everybody just partying in the street, like doing whatever they do. So probably, I think that even in Orwell, there was a kind of resistance going on, and probably we're gonna be going into that probably clandestine thing. Because no, if you think no really government, with few exceptions here and there, it's like telling you about like a future where you can open up without restrictions. So you said in a previous comment that you expected more. As a citizen, I expected a lot more, definitely. I think I'm not going to say that's why I pay the taxes, because those are certain, you know, just like death, just like Mark Twain would say it. But this hasn't happened, and I expected that our cities were more evolved, because we brag about it, that technology would be important, not to ostracize us, but to bring us together. But I don't think that's happening.
No.
And, you know, we already have, for instance, the other day I was seeing a movie called Too Big to Fail about the Wall Street breakdown.
Yeah,
and there's already historical context to see and to prove that those was big power play in a big scheme of things, you know, and that destroyed many lives, that destroyed the tissue of society. And nowadays we can make movies about it, and we can talk about it and be sure that what's like, whatever, madman, such as you said back then, oh, this is all a power play from the big financial companies, etc. We had this everywhere in the world. Here in Portugal, our prime minister said he's going away. Unfortunately, he hasn't. And he's going to make this big political crisis because he didn't want to invest, I think, 30,000 million in education, in upbringing, which is a solution to a lot of problems, as we've seen in Africa, for instance, in the space of 30 years. But then we had to bail out the bank with, I don't know, billions, you know, and we had to rectify the budget, and now it's illegal and it's unconstitutional. So there's definitely two measures here, you know, and it's not wanting to be pessimistic or whatever. It's just in reality, people these days, especially people in power, they choose the wrong path and they know they are doing it, you know, and they choose the personal profit, whatever. I mean, Pedro Arquibarplay was trying to explain me, you have to say that, you have to see that all this is a network, and the bank borrows to enterprises and the companies, and the companies bankrupt. I said, okay, so why doesn't the government talk directly with those companies and say, what do you need? You know, do you need a tax cut? Do you need money? And it's not like giving money to the banks to buy themselves. That's a bit strange. It doesn't make sense. And these banks keep spending big money on advertisement. You know, they have their the bank managers, they still give them like the achievement money, monetary prizes. So yeah, sometimes things, there is a notion of simplicity where things could solve, but does that interest at all to the rulers of society? I don't think it does.
I don't know.
There could be solutions, but
one of the things that really worries me about the situation that we're in is how quiet the banks are. In 2008, there was the banking crisis, and you know, it was a fiscal, you know, crisis, and we had them. I mean, and the public's money was poured into the banks. One of the things that worries me is how quiet they are, because that means that this isn't a financial crisis. And I mean, our state just keeps pouring monies endlessly into this black hole, furloughing people. Yeah. And that what worries me is that that money becomes universal basic income, which then links you financially to, to the state in all ways, because all of your small businesses and jobs have been sent to the wall. And so that makes you dependent in so many ways. There must be, you know, that there's some form of debt forgiveness that I haven't quite worked out in my head, internalized within the banking system and the structure that's happening, or else we're about to enter 20 years of huge depression. But it doesn't seem like that to me. There just seems to be too much money. And I wonder, is that because there's a sort of war going on about the Federal Reserve and the gold standard and all sort of, or replacing fiat currencies or something? Like, my brain is sort of broken trying to understand it, you know?
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that's even a question, but
it's high finance, you know. And,
yeah, I'm not really up on, but I think about it quite a lot.
Yeah, but I read this book about Ken Follett. I don't think it's called Blood Money. It's, you know, Ken Follett, the writer of Pillars of the Earth and World Without End, and the Century Trilogy, which is actually pretty cool, I have to say. And he wrote a book about how banks kind of work, and there's all these books you can read, and exactly not really far from the truth. But then it really comes to the ethics and the morals behind it. And while even the most bloody generals, you know, in the heyday of conquistadors, etc., they always had a kind of philosopher over there, you know, giving advice. Nowadays, for instance, philosophy, which was I studied, took such a backseat, you know. I mean, one of the most famous philosophers is a guy that walks with his books on the Louis Vuitton bags, and it just performs like if it was a stand-up philosophy, you know, and not stand-up comedy. It's called Bernard Henry Levy, and I think he's a Frenchman. And obviously he opposes to some stuff, but, you know, it doesn't go really to the core of the questions that we needed to be answered. So, yeah, I feel like, I mean, whenever when the pandemic started, I called up one of my friends who is a doctor, and he's one of the biggest Merciful Fate collectors in the world. He already examined King Diamond. He has an amazing collection. He has a lot of records, Bratz, etc., really rare stuff. And he's also like musical whatever freak. Only he's like record player. Only the needle costs, I don't know, a lot of money. But he has a nice position here in Portugal. He was a part of our bunch when we were growing up together, you know, listening to Bathory, etc. And I asked him, because even though it's not his speciality, his wife is also a major nurse, and I asked him, what shall we do? It's like, it's being really confusing. I always, said that when we wear a mask, like we are in China, for instance, when I was in the planes, I always like felt like really weirded out about that they're using a mask. And nowadays, if I wanted to take my kid to the school, which I do every day at 8 a.m., I have to wear that. You know, I think this was kind of a giant leap, you know, almost our own the great leap forward. Like Mao Zedong did with the sparrows. The other day, I read a piece on the newspaper and said, where are the sparrows in Portugal? And I started like being really afraid, not only of the COVID, but what happened in China back then in the 50s. I don't think we have reasons to. Our survival instinct will kick in, you know, and then it's not going to be about drinking in pubs anymore. And I think that we quite, like you say, the agents, the power agents are really, really stretching this into a point that, we see it here and there. We see glimpses of it. We saw the invasion of the Capitol. We saw people are not really happy, and people will be people. And it's like there cannot be too many rules. There could be something that's the rules or the law or the constitution, you call it, has to serve the people, you know, in any format, whatever. That doesn't matter for me if it's right, wrong, left, center, up, or bottom. But nowadays, I think people that have that kind of power totally forgot about it. I totally like, and yeah, for instance, COVID lets them get away with it.
Yeah, democracy is paused and civil liberty is suspended temporarily. And I think it takes a big push to get it back. Like I've been saying to people, is like, if you can tell me any time in history when any citizens of any nation, city, state got all of the freedoms that they handed away back, I would like to know it, because it ain't true. But anyway, well, sir.
Yeah, I cannot recall that. But anyway, yeah.
Give me something then. Because what happens is that we get to a certain point where timeline where my it doesn't render properly. So I'll try and finish up a little bit. But do you think of something positive in the next 6-12 months? What can you imagine human nature conquering in the face of all of this? Or an element of it?
That's a hard question. Honestly, I always try to look to the future, to the kids, you know, especially an 8-year old. But that's what brings me exactly to the opposite of what you're asking me. You know, it's like, for instance, I was not the kind of kid that grew up in the street. My brother was. But I had the option. I was the quiet guy that liked to be home reading some Jules Verne books, whatever. That kind of shaped my personality. But my brother was like, he didn't care. He didn't went to school. He skipped school. So there was... freedom. Jokingly, what's positive here in Portugal is the price of red wine. A drunk nation, it's an obedient nation. So you go to the supermarket and things have never been so spectacularly cheap when it comes to red wine. I could say, I can say it's not like this sentence that I say you know, like the end of an interview or whatever. But the only positive thing I can say is that I will not give up without a fight. Boy, musically, as a citizen, I think I have it in me. I can put up a fight. I don't know what's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be with weapons. I don't know if it's going to be with stones and sticks. I don't know if it's going to be through Moonspell. Probably not.
Vicious tweets. Yeah,
because the thing is that politics got hold of us. Even bands that are about fiction and fantasy or whatever, we kind of, our new album is probably the most political album we did in a way as well. And people just hate that, you know. People just want you to be an entertainer, which I am as well. But sometimes it just you cannot get out of the rain, you know, without being wet.
I know. So I'm doing it for this, but yeah.
The positive thing is that I hope it keeps raining, because we shouldn't give up without a fight. I'm not, you know, telling anyone to be hopeful or optimistic. Hopefully something different. And we, as a Catholic brought country, and all ourselves were brought Catholic, we kind of have learned hope, even sometimes thought in a fake way. We kind of know the concept. Some other countries don't. Optimism is a concept I like. Optimist is what politicians do. You know, they go and smile while they are... stabbing you in the back with the other hand. They have a knife behind their back when they shake your hand. So yeah, I think that the only positive thing is that even very restrained, some people still have the will to fight and can be a Spanish guy just drinking, you know, like a Spanish brandy outside and getting arrested by it and then starting the movement. I don't know. I think people are getting a little bit restless because this is completely contra nature. Yeah.
We need we need a European spring, is what you mean.
Yeah. Well, be careful what we wish for. Yeah. But we need this kind of. I read this. I was never a big fan of the federalism of Europe. I think it worked in a strange way. But, you know, I still have this bitter feeling that our fishermen, which is tradition in Portugal, cannot go elsewhere to gain their, not their bread, but to have their fish. But there is this French author called Laurent Godet that did this kind of book called Our Europe. And it's pretty cool because it's an historical poem, and it's been a while since I read one, you know, because that kind of format in literature nowadays, it's all very like novel oriented, etc. And sometimes I feel the hope in those really simple things that you've been talking about constantly on this podcast, which is probably a nice word, a meaningful word, like, you know, the reopening of a pub. Because, yeah, so today I could drink a coffee and an espresso in the terrace with my wife and my kid. And sometimes I felt weird because I was feeling happy about it. And this is true control. When you feel happy about such a, you know, a vulgar, banal thing,
yeah,
it's that we are in deep shit, definitely.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits.
Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.